Congressman John Shimkus on the other end of the line. Morning, John. How are you this morning, buddy? Good?
Freezing rain.
Yeah.
I'll take Arctic cold. I'll take snow. I hate freezing rain.
I hate freezing rain, just like all my friends who are linemen for the power company.
Yeah.
Freezing rain either.
Nope. You know,
It's interesting, John, that I don't know that a lot of people are aware of how involved you were in the final negotiations for the Republican tax reform legislation.
Well, I don't want to overstate my role, but I was on, when I taught high school, the way a bill becomes law is that a bill passes the House, a bill passes the Senate. Usually they're different. Then you have to go to a conference, which means you get a group of House members and a group of senators together to reconcile and craft a single bill, which then goes back to both chambers to get voted on. So not being on the tax committee, I was kind of on the outside until that issue of the conference report came out, and then I was one of the conferees, which was pretty cool. But it also, multiplied or exponentially grew my contacts and my trying to dig a little bit deeper into tax reform to be able to answer questions of people. And obviously I had more visitors and more calls because of it. And I was there mostly because of the energy portion of the portfolio. There was Senator Murkowski got ANWR opened in this bill, which is something I've supported for over 20 years. I mean, and it's not just ANWR, it's really one small area. I've mentioned this to you. The drilling area where there actually would be exploratory wells is the size of a football field in an area that's the size of South Carolina. So it's an easy one for me. And then there was also, to help pay for that, since it didn't score in the 10-year window, is we had to sell some oil out of the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, which brought me into the room. And so it was kind of a fun last-minute sort of activity. If you're going to be stuck in Washington, I always believe you'd rather be working, and I got a chance to be working.
I'm going to pay less taxes next year, John?
Yeah, I think if you're not paying attention to what we did. I just refer people to taxplancalculator.com.
Okay.
And you send that out, let your listeners know, and have them put their data in, and then see if we are right, and that most people are going to see a tax cut. Now, and some major networks have done this already. I mean, we've gotten clips from my colleagues from all over the country where their local studios have taken maybe four different groupings of people and families.
That's CBS that did that.
And plugged them in, and everybody got some tax relief.
Right. I went to CNN and used their tax calculator, and apparently after putting my numbers in, that Donald Trump's going to come to my house and stab me in the chest.
Well, I hope not.
But see, that alluding to the hyperbole that was involved here, you and I often talk about sophistry and hyperbole. And intellectual dishonesty is what I prefer to call it, because it's blatant, it's ongoing. I mean, Nancy Pelosi, basically nothing short of we're all going to die. I mean, what is the legacy of a party that every single member votes against tax relief for every citizen in this country?
I think it just helps us define. Everybody says, well, there's no difference between the two parties. You hear that quite a bit. Well, there's huge differences. One party believes in that the best money to be spent is held by the individual, not the government. This speaks to the size of government. The less money you provide for the government, the argument is that you have to decrease the size of government. Democrats like big government. They want a federally driven bureaucracy to create fairness in every aspect of our lives, and that takes money, and that takes tax revenue to do it. So it speaks to the very fundamental difference between the two parties.
Because when you take a look at the national, the rhetoric in the Democratic Party on this, and they go to their default position is look what it'll do to the debt after supporting a president for 8 years that tripled the national debt, fastest growing national debt in any presidential term ever. And then suddenly they're concerned about $1 trillion when they weren't concerned about 7, 3, and 4, and 8. But still I get the sense that in the war of public opinion that the Democrats still are winning in many respects.
Well, that's why we encourage people just go to taxtimecalculator.com and they'll see that the fallacy of their argument. You know, and on the debt issue, don't get me wrong, we're definitely concerned about deficit and debt. Again, this speaks to the different view of how government operates, where we want to be. Do we want, as a nation, to stay in the malaise of the past 8 or 9 years where we're growing at 2.5% and be and accept that? Or do we want to get back to a country by which we are optimistic, we're growing, and there's excitement for the future? That's what we think tax relief does. On the corporate side, I think we've seen 900,000 workers receive bonuses or pay increases since the tax package. We've seen some excitement, renewed excitement in the stock market. I mean, we want an exciting country that people can look to the future and say, yeah, I'm going to renew the American dream, and this is an exciting time, not, all right, well, we're just going to plug along at 2.5% growth.
Right. The new normal is what they like to call it.
Yeah, I don't like that. And see, I want it to be the new normal.
Right. That you know, we have potential here that, you know, I forgot who it was. Maybe it was Donald Jr. saying something. There's people in Washington who don't want America to be America anymore. Alluding to that, you know, some people would call it patriotism, and some of it's faith in your fellow human being and citizen. That, you know, you realize why are we content with malaise? And right. We had been that way, and because we had told that's what's the new standard, that's what's the new normal. Here's the thing. There are some substantial challenges going forward. There's a meeting at Camp David. I believe that a battle plan of sorts is being drawn up. The president alluding to earlier in the week that he thought some Democrats would come in and help when it comes to infrastructure. But this issue of infrastructure and the Dreamers, the deferred action there, this is going to be the next hot-button issue through spring, isn't it?
Yes, I mean, we have to get back. I think their meetings were, they had a couple reasons to have these meetings. And even before they went to Camp David, they sat down with, Schumer and Pelosi to really, I think, try to figure out how we pass a final spending bill, which we have to do by January 19th. DACA could be part of that debate. I'm not sure, although the press release from the president and McConnell and Ryan said, you know, the Democrats shouldn't expect that DACA reform should be in a final spending bill. So I think they laid down their markers, and we'll see what happens. Everybody supports infrastructure. As I've told you in studio many times, is I think our only problem is figuring out how to replenish the Highway Trust Fund. You know, if the Highway Trust Fund was set by Reagan in '83. And then you don't allow for its growth based upon the growing cost of equipment and building roads and bridges and new standards and all that stuff. You finally deplete that trust fund where you really can't do much. That's why you see states struggling to raise their gas tax because we're not dealing with it, and we probably should. And that would help us open up a lot of other redevelopment issues and brownfields and water and telecommunications. I mean, a huge infrastructure bill could address a lot of really concerns of rural America.
And you know what's interesting as far as state and infrastructure development, a four-lane highway from Murfreesboro or Carbondale or something to St. Louis. You know, this four-lane coalition. Yeah. I know you're involved in some working to help some railroad work up in the St. Louis area. The part that's your district, but you know this four-lane highway would be something that would be a breath of oxygen, fresh oxygen coming into southwestern Illinois, and I see. I know, and it's going to take years to get it done, but they've already got some of the property purchased.
Yeah. Well, it's a huge, huge price tag. I mean, I've got issues with the Route 50 four-lane coalition that's been, you know, beaten on me for decades. And we did Route 67, which is a Alton to kind of Jacksonville up to the Quad Cities area. So I know these plans and coalitions are important to keep the pressure on. But the only way these things will even get really moving in a manner in which people see it is we have to fund the Highway Trust Fund. And so people have to understand when they ask for these things, there is a cost. And I believe the simplest way is a gas tax.
You know, the environment in which we try to make America better again and create law and create bipartisan efforts, the lowest ebb I've ever seen it, and I've been watching rather closely for an excess of 40 years, but the acrimony, and I know if you look historically, you look back, pretty rough and tumble business political in the early days in America. Then we saw some a little more genteel behavior. But, you know, in particular, I watched you, John, in a section, and the reporters were yelling at you in the hallways. It was during the tax reform debate. And, you know, I've known you long enough to where I can tell that, you know, when you're stressed out and you were, you know, shoulders up, straight back, and they yelled a question, you said, working on it. You know, monosyllabic answers. You know, this environment, John, how do you get things done when everybody wants to kick each other's dogs?
Well, I mean, you're right. You go back in the history of our country, and we're sinful human beings. There's acrimony, there are different views, and there's battles. I do believe pretty much with my whole heart it's social media and 24/7 news. I mean, when you have the cable networks, that all they're doing is they've got to find news, so they've got to find acrimony. They have to shoot. That's not good news for us when we pass a rewrite of the chemical safety law. The bipartisan support president signs. That's not news.
Right.
What's news is when we shut down the government. What's news is so that's part of it because. My colleagues, Republicans and Democrats, for the most part, we're pretty good friends. We've all gone through the litmus test of elections. We all have to do these travels back and forth to Washington, D.C. We all have families. We know each other. We know, and we have developed a pretty good relationship. It's just a matter of how do you move public policy and what gets stolen by the leadership to make a political issue versus what they allow to move for good public policy.
And it's interesting you mentioned this. John Shimkus joining us this morning, Congressman, because when I was looking at the numbers, now I wish I'd written them down, the number of pieces of legislative action that have been taken by the House is really, is it like 400 or something like that, John? I mean, from the last year, it's really 431 or something?
Yeah, and I think 70% are bipartisan. Now, I'm always careful. You don't hear me try to tout these numbers. Some are big pieces of legislation. Some are very simple pieces like land transfers and stuff that are very important to individual members. You know, maybe you take some, like in our area, maybe SIU Carbondale wants some land that's adjacent to Shawnee National Forest and
right.
You do a swap.
Yeah.
So that takes legislation. So I don't want to say that all those are huge pieces of major legislative, but when we've done things on the prescription drug user fee rewrites and some hydropower relicensing and stuff like that. There's quite a bit of it gets passed through the House in a bipartisan manner. What I've learned really in this year watching is how different. I always knew that the Senate was different, but they even move legislation differently. They really develop a coalition of support before they even put the bill on the floor. There's a piece of legislation now, I can't remember what it's called, but I just read yesterday, it's got 60 Senate sponsors. And this is before I think there's really ever even been a hearing in a committee over there. But my guess is you got 60 sponsors, that bill is going to eventually get to the floor and get passed. So, but versus our process in which we may even have hearings, and then we have draft legislation, then we have a hearing on the legislation, then we move it through three committees worth of markup. So totally different process of how a bill becomes a law in each chamber.
Yeah, and a lot of people dissatisfied with the speed in which the Senate's reacting to anything, but there's a lot of dissatisfaction in a lot of different areas. Here's the thing, John. All right, we see the Dow hitting, 25,000 for the first time yesterday. I mean, we can go down the story here, the jobs report, although they'd said 250, turns out to be something close to 148, 4.1 unemployment, higher here in Illinois, of course. Illinois, in my opinion, John, doesn't seem to be positioned well to take advantage of what's going on in the entire country, and that has I'm a little concerned about that. You?
I'm greatly concerned, and I've always been careful not to I'm not an elected rep that goes to Springfield, and I'm not a statewide official. They have their own challenges. They have their own races. They have their own issues they have to deal with. But I'm very concerned that the leadership, bipartisan, can't get together to develop a plan to get us somewhat on a path to fiscal sovereignty while letting the country know that we're open for business. It hurts our citizens.
Well, here's the thing, John. I mean, I'm literally thinking in Springfield, they were watching that tax reform in D.C. and going, oh, well, that's how much we can raise taxes.
Yeah, my issue was, they're crying because we're a high tax state. My answer was, we ought to be a low tax state.
Right. You've got Bob Diber, who released his tax returns, and I was reading his press release yesterday afternoon and talking about how Illinois needs progressive taxes. When you saw this cut, you know, bigger at the low end and then, you know, smaller at the high end, percentage-wise, which you and I talked about last time, and that somebody in Springfield's got their calculator going on, this is what we'll do now, because a lot of people are talking about we need more money in the state of Illinois. We're taxed to the point where people leave, and then they think we need more. I don't know how and whether D.C., as basically with the tax reform, the Republicans have given the Democrats the ability to raise taxes in Illinois without as much damage.
We already have the wealthy leaving the state of Illinois now. I mean, if they would change the tax code to even punish the successful people more, they're just going to drive more money out of Illinois. That's fact. I've talked to a lot of successful businessmen. Some were in hopes that the Governor Rauner would fix this problem and are really wanting to stay. But even before Governor Rauner got elected, people were leaving. Because once you leave the state and take residence of someone else, you wash your hands of this debt and liability that's on the state of Illinois.
Before I let you go this morning, Fire and Fury, the book, and all the rhetoric that's involved here, Steve Bannon, the pressure on the president, people talking about impeachment in the House. You've got, you know, the words being thrown around like he's a moron, he's an idiot. 100% of the people around him think he's not mentally fit. I mean, this new book is going to give a lot of fodder.
Yeah. All I know is he's the president of the United States. People read the Constitution, focus on high crimes and misdemeanors, and if there's none there, they better learn to deal with people that they don't think should serve, and let's get down to doing the business of the country. You know, you kind of get tired of this stuff. He is the president. I had to work with President Obama, and I did it on that the chemical safety bill. You just got to do it, and it's not. It is a terrible time when we can raise money, we can pad our own personal wealth by attacking other people.
Yeah, you've always been the kind of the practical guy, though, and that was my takeaway when I listened to you. Is going, well, you know, business still has to be done. It doesn't matter. You've always been an infinitely practical person, in my opinion. So I guess I that was the answer I probably should have expected.
Well, I can't. You've heard me and you've seen me go crazed and screaming and lose my cool. So I'm not trying to be holier than thou because I know what happens. But there is eventually we've got a government to run and we've got to operate. He's not going anywhere, so they can pound their chest and have all this fury, but it doesn't matter what this guy's written.
It's interesting because you know when I more and more I think about what you said, I have a responsibility. I'm trying to put myself in your shoes, John. I have a responsibility to discharge, and that's where I'm going to. That's where I'm going to put my foot down. I have responsibilities, and you guys are going to go ahead. If you guys want to act that way, you be that way. But I have a responsibility. That was my takeaway.
Yeah, I think that's a fair analysis.
Okay, Congressman John Shimkus, and once again, happy 18. I'm hoping this is a productive year. I just want to be able to see Southern Illinois turn some type of corner where you hear optimism. I had earlier this morning. John, there's no way for you to know this. I had Mike Mills from 17th Street on, and he and his daughter Amy were in here, and I'd invited them in the studio because they are bringing jobs from Indiana to Murfreesboro for the production of their sauce.
Great.
And that's a story you don't hear very often.
No, you don't. You know, because people don't. I mean, it's a good story.
Right.
So I report on a good story.
Well, I felt compelled.